Om sahana vavatu, sahano bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. Welcome to the webcast of our Saturday morning class on Shankaracharya's Atma Bodha. In our last class, we had finished verse 26 and finishing a topic on the false attribution of mental activity. False attribution, superimposition is a word we use most commonly. I was reading comments and some emails that came with regard to this, and there's still some confusion about jiva and about ahankara. So before we leave this topic behind, let's just try to clear up briefly some of that confusion. First of all, what is a jiva? Jiva is a living being. Jiva is an individual entity. Jiva is you and me at a worldly level. And the definition for jiva is a little more complicated than you would think. To introduce this topic, remember the metaphor we gave before of the computer? A computer has hardware, a computer has software, and a computer has electricity pervading its functioning. In the same way, you and I have hardware, our physical bodies. You and I have software, our minds, intellects, our sense organs, the prana, life force that enlivens us, all of these factors, our software, and consciousness within. So notice these three factors: hardware, software, and electricity, sthula sharira, sukshma sharira, and atma, consciousness, chit or chaitanya. In the case of a computer, if you leave any one of the three out, you don't have a functional computer. In the case of the jiva, you and me, if you leave any one of these three out, sthula sharira, physical body, sukshma sharira, subtle body, and consciousness, atma, you leave any one out, you don't really have a jiva. So therefore, jiva is a composite of the three factors, physical body, subtle body, and consciousness, with one note, one caveat, and that is, in deep sleep, your physical body is, for all intents and purposes, absent. So a computer can't exist without its hardware, but jiva can exist in deep sleep and dream without a physical body. But in either event, jiva is still a composite entity. So generally speaking, physical body plus subtle body, plus consciousness, and physical body can be left out in the case of sleep and dream. This composite entity is the one we call jiva, and it is that jiva who suffers. The locus of the problem of suffering, we said, was in the mind of the jiva. By the way, there's no mind without all three factors, right? If you don't have a physical body to host the mind, if you don't have consciousness to illumine the mind. So the point I'm making is, earlier I said the locus of suffering is the mind and ahankara, which we'll come to in a moment. But that mind with its ahankara is part of jiva. So in the most general sense then, jiva, the individual person, is the one who suffers. Bearing in mind that, we finished that topic before. The other question was with regard to ahankara. I'm not sure why that it's confusing. Maybe it's a new concept for many. Ahankara, simply put, as I said in last week's class, ahankara is a thought. No more, no less. But it's an unusual thought. It's a thought that identifies itself as a conscious being. It's the thought in your mind that says, I am so-and-so. Imagine in a computer. Suppose there was one program in a computer, very unusual program, a little bit like an operating system, but more than an operating system. The operating in a system of a computer is unique because it's a one, it's a part, it's the software that's in charge of all the other programs. So there's one program in charge of all the other programs. You could think of the ahankara a little bit like that. Ahankara is not a program. It's not really in charge of anything, but it has a central organizing role in our minds. It's where that sense of I-ness or sense of individuality comes, which is an organizing principle. If you didn't feel like you, how would you function? So the ahankara is a thought, an organizing principle that makes you feel like you. Back to the computer, suppose this operating system was unlike other operating systems. The operating system, which is a program, but this particular operating system said, so to speak, I'm not a program, I'm a conscious being. Imagine, in the computer, an operating system which took itself to be not a program, not software. The operating system identified itself as a conscious being, which obviously is delusion, but so is ahankara, ego. When that thought comes, I am so and so, that thought is also born of delusion, because who you truly are is consciousness, satchit ananda atma. But there's one thought among all your thoughts, one unique thought called ahankara that says, I'm not a thought, I am a conscious being. I am Swami Taratmananda. That thought is there. And as I said before, enlightenment doesn't mean destroying that thought. I can still say, I am Swami Taratmananda. That thought is still there. What is the difference? I know it's only a thought. I don't take it seriously. That thought comes and goes. Last night in deep sleep, it was gone. This morning in meditation, it was gone briefly. It's just a thought. So it's not the enemy. It's just a thought. Anyway, we talked about it more in our prior class. I just wanted to address some confusion with regard to both jiva and ahankara. Now let's continue to our next topic, starting with verse 27, the self-revealing Atma. Let me just introduce that. The title of our text, of course, Atma Bodha, knowledge of Atma. How will we gain this knowledge of Atma, given the fact that Atma is not like anything else? Everything else are objects. Everything else is the known. Atma, as consciousness, is the knower. Look at this basic division. Division between knower, consciousness, Atma, and known. What is known? The world around you is known. Your body is known. Your thoughts are known. Your sensations are known. Atma is not the known. Atma is the knower. Leading to the question, how will the knower be known? Good question. How to know the knower? It's problematic, and Shankara is going to deal with it very thoroughly in the next few verses. And instead of my explaining it, let's let Shankaracharya explain how the knower is known, how consciousness is known. So let us proceed. Repeat after me. Atma vabhasayat yeko, atma vabhasayat yeko, buddhyadinindriyanyapi, buddhyadinindriyanyapi, dipoghatadivatsvatma, dipoghatadivatsvatma, jadaisthairnavabhasyate, jadaisthairnavabhasyate. Atma, ekaha, notice the word ekaha at the end of the first line, it's kind of hidden. Ekaha atma, one atma, one consciousness, one ekaha atma, one consciousness alone, avabhasayati, reveals, is the correct translation there. Bhas is to shine, and here it's causal, avabhasayati, causes to appear, reveals. One consciousness, one atma, avabhasayati, reveals. Reveals what? Consciousness reveals what? Everything. Everything that's known. Here in the second line, buddhi adi indriyani api. So, api. Everything including buddhi, intellect, adi, etc., all of your indriyas, senses. And here Shankara is just using some shorthand. So what does your consciousness reveal? Your consciousness reveals everything that happens in your mind, and whatever happens in your mind is a product both of your mind, buddhi, adi meaning including buddhi and manas, if we want to make that distinction. So consciousness reveals everything that occurs in your mind. What occurs in your mind are thoughts and emotions, thoughts from your buddhi, emotions from your manas, and also sensations. Everything you see, hear, taste, smell, or touch occurs in your mind, arises in your mind. So buddhi, adhi, buddhi and manas, all of your thoughts and all of your emotions, indriyani api, and all of your sensations. These are the three categories of mental events: thoughts or cognitions, emotions, and sensations. These three, ekaha atma, one atma of abhasayati, reveals all three. By the way, one atma means, as we've discussed in prior classes, the same one consciousness that reveals my thoughts, my emotions, and my sensations is the same one atma, one consciousness, that reveals your thoughts, your emotions, and your sensations. We went through that in quite some detail. A little bit like one electricity making thousands of computers work. So one consciousness manifest in you and me and every living being. Now, so we start off by identifying in the first half of this verse, atma or consciousness, chit consciousness, chaitanya consciousness. That consciousness is ekaha, one, that one atma. And that consciousness of abhasayati, it reveals all that's known. There is one knower, and that one knower reveals everything that's known. And here, Shankara gives an example. Just like, in the third line, dīpaha. Dīpa is a lamp, an oil lamp. Could be candle, anything that burns and shines. Take it as a lamp. Dīpaha, a light, gatādivat, just vat, just like a lamp reveals gatari, pot, etc. So this light, the light that's shining down on me, that light reveals this pot. There's one light revealing this one pot. I could have thousands of pots. Any problem? One light can reveal one pot. One light can reveal thousands of pots. No problem. One consciousness can reveal my mind. One consciousness can reveal all mind. There's no problem with that at all. But we're leading up to the point. The point comes in the last part of the verse. By the way, there's a small problem in the Roman transliteration. Dipo gatadivat. There should be a space because the next word is swatma. Swatma. One's own true self. Swatma, your consciousness, which is the same as my consciousness, the same as any consciousness, that one consciousness, swa-atma, one's own consciousness, one's own self, na, the last line, na avabhasyate, is not revealed, is not that one consciousness, na avabhasyate, is not revealed, taihi jadaihi, by those, taihi, by them, by what? Jadaihi, by those inert, insentient things. Now, what inert, insentient things are we talking about? In the third line, buddhi, mind, manas, buddhi, intellect, manas, mind, and indriya, senses, are jada, inert. Now, remember, we went through this carefully before. Let's make sure we're on the same page, as we say. Remember, just as your physical body is made of physical elements, sthula bhutas, your subtle body, including your intellect, mind, and senses, is made of subtle elements, sukshma bhutas. That which is made of physical elements is inert, insentient. That which is made of subtle elements is also inert, insentient, jada. What makes your mind seem sentient is consciousness. Mind plus consciousness equals sentient being. Your mind in the absence of consciousness would have no existence whatsoever, just as software. If you have a computer and you turn it off, there's no electricity. What happens to the software? It's no longer present in the computer's main memory. It's present, I bore you with details, that may be stored in the disk drive, but in the computer's main memory, that software is gone. So the point is that your mind, intellect, and senses are made of subtle elements, sukshma bhutas. Since they're made of elements, they are jada. Now here's the point he's saying. Swa-atma, your true self, consciousness, na avabhasyate, is not illumined, taihi jadaihi, by those inert things. And before we explain it, go back to this pot metaphor. This light illumines the pot. What does a pot illumine? Pots don't illumine anything. Light has the capacity to illumine because light is light. In the same way, consciousness has the capacity to illumine your thoughts and sensations and emotions because it's consciousness. But that which is jada, like this pot, the pot can't illumine the light or another pot or anything else. In the same way, your intellect, mind, and senses can't illumine consciousness. Can't illumine consciousness means can't reveal consciousness. This pot can't reveal the presence of the light, obviously. In the same way, your intellect, watch this carefully, just as this pot can't illumine or reveal the light, your intellect cannot reveal consciousness. I'll say that again. We're making a very important point here. Your buddhi, intellect, cannot reveal consciousness. Hopefully that brings up the question, then how do I know consciousness? How can I gain atma-bodha, self-knowledge? How can I gain self-knowledge if my intellect cannot reveal consciousness? Well, remember the title of this section, Self-Revealing Atma? This light, to see a light shining, that light reveals itself. This pot does not reveal itself. If the lights were off in this room, if it were pitch black, you and I could not see this pot. This pot is not self-revealing. If there's a light in a dark room, that light is self-revealing. Light is self-revealing, pot is not self-revealing. Consciousness is self-revealing. You don't need your intellect to reveal consciousness. Your consciousness is self-revealing. Your consciousness is present, as we've said in many previous classes, your consciousness is present right now in this experience, in the midst of this class. Your consciousness is revealing whatever is happening in your mind. Whatever thoughts, emotions, sensations, you see me, that image of me in your mind, revealed by consciousness. Thoughts, emotions, and sensations are like the pot. They're insentient, inert. They're not self-revealing. They need to be revealed by your consciousness. But just like a light reveals itself, your consciousness is self-revealing. And that's going to be explained more as we continue. Where is that? Yeah, in fact, this flow of verses that given by Shankaracharya is really brilliant. So we'll just continue and let Shankaracharya unfold this particular topic. We'll move on to the next verse. Swabodhe nanya bodhe cha. Swabodhe nanya bodhe cha. Bodharupatayatmanaha. Bodharupatayatmanaha. Nadipasyanyadipecha. Nadipasyanyadipecha. Yatha swatma swatma prakashane. Yatha swatma prakashane. Start in the last line. It'll be easier to understand. Because it gives the metaphor, yatha, just as. And what we're talking about here in the third line is another dipa, a lamp. Yatha, just as, dipa, a lamp, swa atma prakashane. Don't get confused now. Atma can simply mean oneself. With regard to the lamp, swa atma is the self of the lamp, is the lamp itself. So atma just means self, has other meanings depending on context. So swatma prakashane. Prakashane, with regard to illumining, prakashane, with regard to illumining swatma itself. That's all it means here. Swatma can mean your true self, but here in this context it means itself, referring to the lamp. Yatha, just as a lamp, swatma prakashane, with regard to illumining itself, na, oh boy, anya dipa iccha, we have to break all these words apart. Dipasya, for that lamp, Anya, another, Deepa, lamp. Icha means desire. In this context, it means the need for or requirement for. Anya Deepa Icha, the need for another lamp, Deepasya, for the first lamp, to reveal. So Atma Prakashane, excuse me, with regard to a lamp, na Anya Deepa Icha, there's no need for a second lamp to reveal the presence of the first lamp. Make sense? To see the sun, the idea here, the lamp is self-shining, like the light shining on me is self-shining, like the sun outside is self-shining. In order to see the sun, should you bring a flashlight outside? It's silly, right? You don't need the flashlight to see the sun. It is self-shining. To see this light in front of me, I don't need a flashlight. I just see the light because it's self-shining. And if I have a lamp on my hand, in order to see that shining lamp, you don't need another lamp. The lamp is self-shining. The nature of light is to shine, and it reveals itself. In the same way, the nature of consciousness is to shine metaphorically and reveal itself. This is the drishtanta, the metaphor, which is introduced, which is to represent the darshtanta, that which the metaphor is meant for, which is the first half. So the drishtanta, with regard to the illumination of a lamp, with regard to seeing a lamp, and I'm trying to be too literal here. Let me just paraphrase it. It'll be simpler. In order to see a shining lamp, you don't need another lamp. That's simply what it means. So just like in order to see a lamp, you don't need another lamp, in the same way, to paraphrase the first half, in order for your consciousness to reveal itself and be known, you don't need another consciousness. You don't need another lamp to see a shining lamp. You don't need another consciousness to know your consciousness. That's what Shankara says here. Swabodhe. With regard to, there's something tricky in this verse. Let me point out. Bodha most often means knowledge. When I say most often, I would say maybe two-thirds of the time or three-quarters of the time, the word bodha means knowledge. In the term Atma Bodha, it means knowledge. Name of our ashram, Arsha Bodha, again means knowledge. But bodha can also mean consciousness. This is, any language is like that. Words have several meanings, sometimes many meanings, and the meaning of a word depends on context. That's true in English, it's true in Hindi, it's true in Sanskrit. So we just have to be ready for that. Swabodhe, with regard to your own consciousness. Swa, your own, bodha, consciousness. So bodhe, with regard to your own consciousness, na anya bodha icha. Below we had anya deepa icha. You don't need another lamp to see a shining lamp. Here, na anya bodha icha. You don't need another consciousness to know your consciousness. Your consciousness is self-revealing. Your consciousness reveals all your thoughts, emotions, and sensations. How do you know your consciousness? It just shines. You don't need another consciousness to know your consciousness, just like you don't need another lamp to know, to reveal a shining lamp. Look, there's actually a logical problem here. Suppose you needed another consciousness to know your consciousness. So to know your consciousness one, you require consciousness two to reveal consciousness one. But then how do you know consciousness two? You need another consciousness to reveal consciousness two. So consciousness three reveals consciousness two, which reveals consciousness one. But then how do you know consciousness three? You can see immediately we've fallen into this infinite regress, an infinite number of consciousnesses, which is certainly not what you and I experience. We experience one seamless consciousness, partless consciousness, not many consciousnesses. So it's a logical problem. One consciousness cannot reveal another consciousness. One consciousness need not reveal another consciousness. Just like a lamp is self-revealing, your consciousness is self-revealing, which is what he says in the second line. He gives a reason. He says, Bodha Rupataya Atmanaha. And here again, bodha means consciousness, not knowledge. Bodha rupa, having the nature of consciousness. Bodha rupa taya, because your true self has the nature of atmanaha, because the true nature of yourself, Atma, because the true nature of Atma is consciousness, Bodha Rupa, because the true nature of Atma is consciousness, you don't need another consciousness to reveal it. Your true nature, Satchidananda Atma, that Atma need not be revealed by another consciousness because it's self-revealing. Leading to the central question here. And the central question is, and this also, I carry this over from the prior verse. I said, your intellect cannot reveal consciousness because it's insentient, it's inert. Now we've got the question, and that is, how do we gain knowledge of Atma? So in the last two verses have established how it's impossible, watch this, it is impossible to know consciousness in the same way as you know any other object. Full stop. Why? This pot is an object, something that is known. Your consciousness is not known. Your consciousness is the knower. So the issue that we're still struggling with here is how to know the knowable, no problem. How to know the knower is the tricky part here. And let's make it very clear, the knower cannot be known like any object. This object can be revealed by light. We just got done saying your consciousness cannot be revealed by another consciousness. But then again, your consciousness need not be revealed by another consciousness, your consciousness being self-revealing. So how to know something that's self-revealing? And this brings us to, I think, where we ended our last class. Where we ended the last class was with this observation. Because your consciousness is self-revealing, in one way it's already known. You know you're conscious. You can't possibly say, I'm unconscious. How would you, in order to say I'm unconscious, you have to know that you're unconscious. How do you know you're unconscious? Well, you must be conscious of unconsciousness. You get the point. It's all kind of a silly play on words. Anyway, you know, where we ended the last class, I said, you know you are conscious, you don't know the true nature of that consciousness. You know that you are a sentient being, an awareful being. You know that you are the observer or witness of your thoughts, of your emotions, of your sensations. You know that you are that conscious entity, and that conscious entity is Atma. What's not known is the remarkable nature of that consciousness. The fact that that consciousness is uncreated, unborn. The fact that that consciousness is utterly unchanging. And if it's utterly unchanging, it's then utterly unaffected by anything that happens in the world around you and anything that happens in your mind. Also, that consciousness has no edge or boundary. Therefore, that consciousness is limitless. And further, that consciousness is not your consciousness. There is ekaha, we said in the two verses back, ekaha atma. There is one consciousness called Atma, and it is that same one consciousness which illumines your thoughts and my thoughts. So look at this. Consciousness is known in general, but the true nature of that consciousness is not known. Consciousness is known in general because it's self-revealing, as we've said. That self-revealing consciousness is known in general, but the specific nature of that consciousness is not known, and that leads to the problem of superimposition, our prior topic. Because you don't know the true nature of your consciousness, it's very easy to identify ourselves with our bodies and minds. When you say, if I say, I am Swami Taratmananda, I'm identifying with this individual. If I say, I see, hear, taste, smell, and touch, I'm identifying with the sense organs that I possess. If I say, I am intelligent or dull, I'm identifying with the mind. We've been through this several classes before. So the point I'm making is that consciousness is known in general because it's self-revealing, but the true nature of your consciousness is not known. And as a result of that ignorance, not knowing the true nature of yourself is ignorance. Because of ignorance, there are many wrong conclusions, such as, I am Swami Taratmananda. The true I is consciousness. Consciousness is not Swami Taratmananda. But when I say, I am Swami Taratmananda, there appears to be some ignorance there, wrong conclusions based on this failure to understand the true nature of consciousness. And that's what Shankara describes or explains in the next verse. We'll see this one more verse. Nishidhya nikalo padin, nishidhya nikalo padin, neti neti ti vakyataha, neti neti ti vakyataha, vidyaraikyam mahavakyar, vidyaraikyam mahavakyar, jivatma paramatmanoho, jivatma paramatmanoho. How to know the self, Atma. We've already said, Atma is self-revealing. You already know you're a conscious being. Then the question becomes, how to know the true nature of that consciousness? And that's what Shankara addresses here. He says, nishidhya, having negated, nishidhya, after negating, Nikhila Upadhin, breaking the words apart for you. Nikhila means all. Like Sarva means all, Nikhila means all. Upadhin is plural. Upadhi, we've used that word before. Upadhi, technically conditioning adjunct, but we can think about it in a very simple way. Your body is an upadhi, a conditioning adjunct, leads you to identify with the body. Your sukshma sharira, subtle body, is an upadhi. Your mind, intellect, your senses, all of these are upadhis. All of these are not your true nature. And that's why Shankara says, nishidhya, having negated, nikala, all that is upadhi, all that is associated with you, but that's not your true nature. Certainly, you're associated, the body is associated with you, mind is associated with you, intellect is associated with you, senses are associated with you, prana is associated, all of that. You have there is an association with all of that, but none of it is your true nature. All of it, remember that subject-object, knower-known. You are the knower of your body. You are the knower of your mind, intellect, senses, prana, etc. As the knower, you are absolutely separate and distinct from the known. And that's what Shankara is saying here. Nishidhya, having negated, nikala, all of those factors, body, mind, and senses, which are external to you, which are separate from you, which are different from you. Maybe you possess them in a certain sense, but they're not you. You have a body, you're not a body. You have a mind, you're not your mind. You get the point. Nishidhya, having negated all of these factors. How? Vakyataha, end of the second line, through a statement. What statement? Well, he uses a very famous statement that occurs in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. One of the 10 Upanishads we study frequently is called Brihadaranyaka. In that Upanishad comes this famous statement. You've already heard this statement. Neti, neti. Iti. The final iti puts neti, neti in quotation marks. Neti is actually two words. Na iti. Na iti, na iti. Neti, neti. It is not, it is not. Or not this, not this, not this. It's a statement of negation. Not this, not this, not this. I am not my body. The body is an object known to me. I am the conscious being. The body is an object known to me. My prana, life force, is an object known to me, the conscious being. My sense organs are objects known to me, the conscious being. Therefore, they're not me. My mind, all of my, break it down, all of my sensations that occur in my mind are objects known to me. They are not me. Anything known to me is not me. A pot is known to me, it's not me. Whatever occurs in my mind is known to me, it's not me. So for you, your anything, any sensations that arise in your mind are known to you, therefore they're not you. Your emotions that arise in your mind are known to you. You are the knower. Emotions are known to you. Happiness and sadness are known to you. You are the knower of happiness. You are the knower of sadness. As the knower, you are separate and distinct from anything known, including happiness and sadness. Therefore, those emotions are not you, and thoughts also are known to you. You are the knower of your thoughts as the knower of your thoughts, you are separate and independent of those thoughts. Those thoughts are not you. Neti, neti. Not this, not that. This is a process of negation. Notice our subject is how to gain Atma Bodha. How, and here Bodha in the sense of knowledge. Notice we're flipping back and forth. Prior verse, we use Bodha in the sense of consciousness. But in the expression Atma Bodha, Bodha means knowledge. So how to gain that Atma Bodha, which is self-revealing, but the nature of that consciousness is not known. So there's two steps, and Shankara gives those two steps in this verse. Step one is given in the first half. What is that step? Negation. I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this, not the body, not the mind, not the senses, neti, neti, neti. Using that famous statement from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, step one. What is step two? Please note that negation alone can never give you knowledge. Negation alone is not enough to gain knowledge. Suppose I wanted to give you knowledge about an elephant through negation. Suppose you've never seen an elephant, you've never heard of an elephant. I know it's not possible, but just as an example. Suppose I want to define elephant only through negation. And I say, an elephant is not a cow, an elephant is not a car, an elephant is not a rock, an elephant is not a house, an elephant is not a planet. Tell me, when will that process of negation lead to knowledge of elephant? Never. So please note that step one that Shankara gives here is negation. But that's only step one. It's one of two steps. Negation alone cannot yield knowledge. However, without negation, you won't gain knowledge. Unless you negate the snake, you won't know it's a rope, right? Using our famous rope snake example. In order to know it's a rope, you have to negate the snake. So here, with regard to gaining self-knowledge, Atma-Bodha, negation is crucial as the first step. To negate, I am not this body, I am not this mind, I'm not this prana, I'm not these senses, etc. Step one is negation. Neti, neti. What is the second step? So having nishadhya, having negated all these factors through neti, neti, what is step two? Vidyat. Breaking the words apart. Vidyat aikyam. Vidyat. You should know. You should know. You should discover. You should understand better. You should understand aikyam, oneness. Vidyat, you should understand aikyam, the oneness of what? Last line. Jivatma, paramatma, and that noho is a dual ending. You should know the oneness, you should discover, you should realize the oneness, you should realize the identity of jivatma, jivatma, the atma of jiva. You are the jiva, your atma is consciousness. So jivatma simply means your consciousness. I'll say that again, it's too simple. People get confused. It's easy to get confused. Atma is the self of jiva, you, the individual being. The self of you is your consciousness. Jivatma means your consciousness. Paramatma is not your consciousness. Whose consciousness? The consciousness. the one all-pervasive consciousness, that underlying, we'll get too far here, that one all-pervasive consciousness is called here Paramatma. Jivatma, individual consciousness. Paramatma, universal consciousness. And of course, as we've discussed in several prior classes, your consciousness is non-separate from universal consciousness. Jivatma is Paramatma. There's no difference, there's no distinction whatsoever. Just like there's no distinction between the electricity in one computer and the electricity in another computer, there's one electricity in all the computers. There is one consciousness present in all living beings, but in terms of our experience, we distinguish Jivatma, my consciousness, as if it's different from your consciousness. It's not different. You get the point. Therefore, vidyat, you should understand, you should discover, you should realize the aikyam, the oneness, the identity of jivatma, your individual consciousness, and paramatma, universal consciousness. You should you should discover or realize the identity of your consciousness with universal consciousness. How will you do that? He says, Mahavakyaihi. Through the Mahavakyas. Mahavakya, literally big statement, but it means we use the term Mahavakya as a technical term in Vedanta. We define Mahavakya as any statement which reveals the identity between Jivatma and Paramatma. That's our definition. Any statement that reveals the identity of the individual and the whole, the microcosm and the macrocosm, if we want to use those words. Any statement that reveals that identity, that statement is a Mahavakya, such as Tat Tvam Asi. Tvam, your consciousness, Jivatma, Tat, universal consciousness, Paramatma, Asi, you are. Your consciousness is non-different from that universal consciousness. Or another Mahavakya, I am Atma, Brahma. I am Atma, this consciousness, your consciousness, Jivatma, is Paramatma, here called Brahman. I am Atma, your consciousness is Paramatma, Brahman. There's no distinction. There are, we speak of four Mahavakyas just because we choose one from each of the four Vedas, but Mahavakya doesn't mean only those four. Any statement that reveals the identity between the individual and the whole, between the microcosm and the macrocosm, any statement that reveals the individual, the identity between your consciousness, Jivatma, and universal consciousness, Paramatma, that is a Mahavakya. Now, just to put this together, look at the two steps. Step one, negation, to understand, to remove wrong conclusions about your consciousness. Again, you already know that you are a conscious being, but you have many wrong conclusions about that consciousness. Does that consciousness might have a birthday? That consciousness might have a gender, male or female? That consciousness might have an age? All of those are wrong conclusions. So, step one, negation, neti, neti, to remove all those wrong conclusions. Then, step two. We said already, negation is not enough to establish a truth. You can't define an elephant through negation. You can't understand your true self through negation alone. So following this negation, neti, neti, in the first half of the verse, comes the Mahavakya, like Tattvamasi, you are that. Any that to reveal the identity between your consciousness and universal consciousness, between Jivatma and Paramatma. I'm shaking my head. Just after all these years, I am still so amazed by the profundity and thoroughness of the teaching methodology used in Advaita Vedanta. Look at these two steps. Negation followed by revelation of identity. This is brilliant. And I don't think it's to be found anywhere else. So this is extremely profound. Okay, what else do I want to say here? I think... I think that's it. So, just worth reflecting on. In order to gain, we'll just summarize. Consciousness is self-revealing. You don't need another consciousness to reveal it. But about that consciousness, which is your true nature, you have so many wrong conclusions. In order to gain Atma-Bodha, self-knowledge, you need first, negate all your wrong conclusions, and then with the help of the Mahavakya, which means with the help of the teachings of Vedanta, you come to discover that your consciousness is utterly non-separate from the consciousness that pervades the universe, the consciousness which is ultimately understood to be the very fabric of existence. Obviously, much more to be discussed. We'll conclude here and continue next time. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah. Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Tat Sat.